Yeah, from Austin, Texas to Essex, England. 5 months later, this is the Slipstream Podcast. We've had a little bit of a break. It's been a little, we've taken a little bit of time. And what we needed to do is just step away from the madness that is this runaway success of a podcast and just reflect, really. We've needed to reflect on, you know, just, you know, what is success, really, and what is celebrity.
Yeah.
And because, I mean, neither of us are able to go out to eat at this point. I mean, we can't go to a restaurant.
No.
We can't go to Target and just, you know, get some shampoo. My cat can't just settle the hell down and stop playing with whatever she's doing.
They're having a crazy time in the background. Back there, wow.
It's just insanity. No, actually, it's crazy, James, because obviously joined again by my co-host from across the pond, Mr. James Lingy, 12 Lingfield. It's been wild. We started this podcast at the beginning of the 2021 season. And at that point, I had zero jobs. I had no jobs. I was fun employed as per the COVID drag on, and started this as a project in the middle of that where I was like, hey, I need something to do. I like racing. Let's talk about racing. And now I have three jobs. So we went from the no jobs to three. And so now it's just like, oh man, life happened. And apparently a very crazy 2021 season just happened. And I figured it got like a month or two in where I guess it's been a few months really since we did one. The last one was like October or something like that. But it got a few races in and I was just like pinging you. I was just like, maybe we should just wait until the end of the season. We'll just wrap it all up. And then we'll talk about there's some changes that we're going to do for the 2022 season later on in the episode. And we'll go over that. But for now, man, how are you doing? How's your holiday season been? And we'll get into the madness in a second of this season. How you doing, buddy?
I mean, the biggest change since we last sort of did a pod, I'm sure you know, is I am now also employed, which is crazy to say. I started this podcast when I was I think just at the start of my third year of university, and now I've got a job that starts in January. That's crazy.
Oh, we've got we're employed.
I know. Look at us.
Look at us. Yeah, who would have thought? We're gainfully employed. And and it's good. It's good to be more busy than like not busy at all, because the things go crazy. So cool, man. Congratulations, dude.
Thank you. Cheers.
We've been chatting back and forth. You're kind of like, I guess I'll just chill until I get a job. It's there's a lot of pubs to hit and
that's if the world doesn't end again because of COVID, I think it's threatening to, but let's just pretend that doesn't exist for the next 45 minutes. Yeah.
Screw them. Yeah. We'll do whatever it takes. I got my go bag anyway. I don't know about you, but over in Texas, I got my go bag. I got a go bag ready to go in case of any situation, disease, are there anything, it's something that I have and it's just there. It's, I don't know what it is, like a Texas man thing, but like I have a bag, dude. I have a
bag. What's a go bag? Sorry.
It's got supplies. It's got weapons. It's got food, you know.
Oh, that's like your apocalypse inventory. You're uncharted.
Like
it's
not all in one bag, but it's like in close quarters, so I know where it all is, you know. And I've got a Marine Scout sniper buddy that taught me the art of the go bag, which is essential, just to be ready, because you watch the movies and you're just like, why don't you have Cliff bars ready, for the zombie.
Yeah.
You weren't prepared for the zombie apocalypse. What's going on? So cool, man. I mean, we're doing good. We just we haven't been around for a while. And to our three listeners, we apologize, but it is what it is, dude. Man, what a season, man. What even is this? I think the last episode we did was for Zandvoort. And so there's been a lot of
things that happened
since Zandvoort. So I guess I don't know if we don't want to recap every race, but we did get to see just real quickly. We did get to see him go back to Interlagos, which is both of ours. Like, I think it's both of our favorite tracks.
Yeah. Oh, by a mile. It's so good.
Interlagos. I got to hit Coda and see these cars in action. Really happy to be able to squeeze in there at last minute. The cool thing about Craigslist and like eBay and living in a city where a track is you can just hop on eBay 2 days before a race weekend if it's here, and then just grab a wristband for a fairly low price. People just can't go, and they're just like, well, I guess I'll just recoup, you know, yeah, whatever I just paid for it. And so
wow.
I was able to snag a wristband and rode with some friends that had a good little parking pass down in turn 7.
Nice.
And so I was like, hey, let me ride with you and I'll buy beers all weekend. Sure, it'd work out. And so we had a good time. And man, we were right there on turn 9 into 10, where it's, I believe it's 9 to 10, where it's like out of the S's into the quick little downshift, fourth gear uphill into the right hander that takes you down into the hairpin for the straight. Do you know what I'm talking about at Coda?
Yeah, like the last of the, it's like that sort of awkward, like track limitsy turn. Is that the, with the DRS
right
section
before
point?
That. It's right before that awkward little downhill left hander. That's
when you come back up
with the track limits right there.
Yeah.
So we spent a lot of our time in that little sweeping right into that section. And man, what a fun place to be for the United States Grand Prix. I spent quali up on that little blind left hander that you're talking about. Now the Saturday previous to the race, I went up there and got some cool footage of all the cars. Trying to make it on those track limits. And it was actually pretty rad to be able to spot the differences between how the Red Bulls, the McLarens, the Mercedes cars handled that blind left with the track limits. And then how cars like the Alfa Romeos and the Haases handled those too. And you actually are able to kind of pick up on the changes of pace between these cars, man. And it was really cool to see in person. And I highly recommend if anybody is able to do that next year, go do it if you haven't already. But it was really neat, man. Watched Raikkonen spin right in front of us. He's had a spin in the United States Grand Prix, like right at the end. And it happened.
Yeah.
You know, 50 yards in front of me. And it scared the crap out of us, too, because we had basically Max and Lewis had lapped, you know, or was just ahead of the field. So that field was all jumbled up by then. So I was looking up at the turn, watching one of these cars take the turn, and all of a sudden you see Kimi just careening. You just hear like gravel, like spin, and just see Kimi coming out of nowhere. And it was wild to see one of those cars just spin right in front of you. You're just like, wow, this is a lot of power, a lot of speed. You can hear them cutting the air. Like you can hear those cars cutting through the air.
That's really cool.
And they're going, yeah, man, because when you can walk down to a spot right after they come out of turn one, and right after turn one, they're coming into sixth, seventh, eighth gear into those S's, or I believe they probably stay in seventh. At least I do when I'm playing the game. And we all know that we're the same people, us and the rest.
Of course.
So
we are actually better. We just want to give them a chance.
And we just want to give them a chance. And I have to take care of this cat. So that's why I'm here and not. there's a spot where you're coming down off of that turn one, which is a crazy launch up into that elevation and then back down, and then you kind of slingshot back down like a roller coaster. And if you stay in that little nook right before they hit the S's, they're in about seventh gear into eighth, maybe if they go up there. And if you just look at the track and don't follow with your eyes and just watch them, it is one of the most insane things I've ever seen in my entire life. They're so fast, and you can hear the gearboxes change. You can hear the differences in the gearboxes between the Mercedes and the Red Bull engines and the Ferraris. You can hear the clicks and the turbo, and it was just so fast and so cool, man. Rick was moving a lot. I was watching Rick a lot through qualifying. Hi, what's up? Do you want to just join in on the show today, or you're looking at something outside, or how's that going?
I like to imagine that's how it feels to have an engineer where your cat is there. You're like, that's like your person in your ear telling you everything about your lap time and your engine temps.
Yeah, she is. She's my engineer when I do laps. And what she likes to do when I do laps in the game is put a paw over my face.
Oh, brilliant.
And just kind of test my peripheral abilities, my depth of perception, things like that. And so that's how she comes in handy. She's a great engineer like that. But no, man, it was just a great experience. And I recommend anybody go to go to a Grand Prix and just see the whole thing. The atmosphere is amazing. One other note on that I wanted to touch on with you on this podcast is how crazy it is to hear the differences in turbo between the rest of the cars and the Alpines. And the whine on the turbo on the Alpines is real, dude. That's a real vibe on those.
Really? Things,
because the Alpines will go past you and it'll just be whang. You could just hear the hybrid going and you're just like, okay, this is different engineering. But yeah, man, it was crazy. We've had a crazy season, a lot of races. We saw Jeddah.
Wow, what a Brazil. And thinking that's the most insane race of the season. It was Brazil and Interlagos.
Yeah.
And then it turned out that was probably not even top five, given the amount of crazy stuff that happened and how crazy Jeddah was, the ending of Abu Dhabi. Oh,
it was mad. What are your, I don't even know where to start with you because I want to get your thoughts on a lot of this. And we're a bit of an abbreviated episode this morning, but just to kind of cap off, just to put the cherry on top of the season, baby, and then we'll move on to next year. But I don't know. I guess give me your thoughts on real quick, just Brazil, that going wide incident on that. And then I guess Jeddah, like just move on into Jeddah and then the rest of the season, just give me your whole thoughts on just those races. And then we'll talk about the end of the last race there.
I mean, so, something I messaged you, I think it was after Brazil. And so I remember watching Max get booed on the podium. Now I never think you should do booing. I think F1 is not the sort of sport that tribalism improves. But I remember texting you saying it's crazy how Lewis has sort of controlled the narrative and put himself as like the hero and Max as the villain. Because most tracks we go through, Lewis would get booed, sort of, the favorite, the person, the sort of the old guard and everything.
Yeah.
But I think that was a sign of Max really starting to feel pressure.
Yeah.
And he pulled out sort of everything he had in his trick book.
He did.
It didn't work. I think it probably warranted a penalty, if I'm honest.
The Brazil turn four?
Yeah. I mean, it didn't matter in the end, but I think if I was a steward, I'd have given it to him.
Yeah.
But I think that was where you really saw Max go like, oh God, like I'm in a real fight here. Lewis has woken up,
Yeah, yeah. It was really interesting to see at the last part of the season how Mercedes came to life and just tried to stick their foot down. And I think they did in a lot of ways and pulled some pace out of the car that just wasn't there at the beginning of the season. Wasn't showing up. And then all of a sudden they're like, oh, I guess we're in a title fight. We should figure this out. And all of a sudden their car is right up there again, because it looked like for the first, half, three quarters of the season, Red Bull just outright had the pace of your car. And at the end, it just was about neck and neck, which was pretty insane.
Mm. I think over the whole season, I think you couldn't really say that one car was better or worse. I'd say maybe the Red Bull edged it on balance, but I think the Red Bull was also harder to drive. So
yeah.
I think that's what made this season so exciting, is it wasn't like one of the seasons where you could say, oh, X driver one key had the better car.
Yeah.
I think over the whole season, the cars were as good as each other.
Yeah.
So I think Max was totally skipping on a bit now. I think Max totally was a worthy winner, to be honest, of the season.
I think he was too. I think the championship was, it lasted over the whole season. I mean, it was neck and neck the whole time. That's what makes this last race and how that was handled such an interesting thing. And we'll get to that in a second. So new track, with Jeddah, what a racy track, man. What a crazy circuit that is. Obviously a lot of incidents that weekend. F2, I don't think there was a single start. Am I remembering this correctly? Not a single start where there wasn't an incident on turn one. Do you like, even with F2, if F3 did their championship there at all, but I know with like all the F2 starts, there was just an incident. So it's like, okay, is this a track that needs to be adjusted for next year? Was this kind of a test runner? It's weird and I'm sorry to cut you off, but just to cap off that thought, it's weird having a track that's 5 days old. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's 5 days old. And then we're going to go race the fastest cars in the world on it. And it's like, could we not have found a better way to hook that up? Like, no pun intended. Like, how?
Yeah.
Like, how? So it had to be down to the wire 5 days. So I don't know, man. It's I guess it's a different place, but still, safety wise, I think it's pretty easy to have a uniform thing of safety rules. And it's weird that that isn't one of them where it's like, hey, a track needs to be older than 5 days.
Yeah. I sort of think if it wouldn't have been the third to last race of what Pinotta race of such a crazy season, I'm not sure that it would have gone ahead.
Yeah.
It's not the safest track. And I also think it wasn't stewarded very well. I think some of the race director decisions, I remember the safety cars being quite late to come out. And it's not the first time that's happened this season. I remember Baku, do you remember how long it took for the safety cars and the red flags to come out when Max and Stroll crashed? Yeah. So I think with the stewarding team we have at the moment, combined with the track, I don't think it's particularly safe at the moment.
Yeah.
Which is a shame because I think it's a very unique challenge to have the pressure of the walls with the speed of the other drivers. But something has to change in it because it was a bit of a farce, I thought, that race really. It was cool from like a drama point of view, but the racing wasn't good and the stewarding wasn't good at all, I didn't think.
Yeah, it really wasn't. It's so crazy how that track is. You're either in the wall or you're on the limit where you want to be gaining tenths per lap on that, especially out of those kind of corners where they kind of cap the track off on either end. And so you're coming out of one of those two corners and you're coming up against that wall with the banking and you have to be revving up on those portions. But also you might just lose your ass end to the wall on those things. And so it's like right on the limit. And I think that's what they're going for. But it's a weird thing of like, okay, where's the line between this is a good track to race on for really good competition. And this is putting drivers in danger every time we put them on the track with 20 other drivers. And throughout the season leading up, you can see all of these other race starts where these guys are so phenomenal. I mean, they're, you know, arguably the top 20 drivers in the world. And so you can watch them go down like a turn one in Interlagos or a turn one at Coda or even that Coda had, you know, Lance went around. But like you could watch them. Turkey is one of them where, I mean, and even Alonso had to go off the track there. But still, you can watch these cars manage a turn one without a lot of incidents. And with Jeddah, it was just so new. And the design is just so on the edge that it was almost as if it was a multiplayer race. Like you're in a multiplayer lobby or something. It was the first race I've seen all season where I'm like, okay, am I watching my own like league race? Like going on? It's like, are these the top 20 drivers in the world? And you're like, oh no, this track is insane. I mean, and then because out of turn one into turn two, and then you have to gun it into the next section, but also at the same time, the track is funneling in. And then that's where Checo ran into his problems. And yeah, I think George ran into the back of him. And it was just such a wild situation with the track, not even getting into the rest of the race, which was insane. Just a wild track. You think they're going to make adjustments next year?
I don't know about the actual track. I think maybe some runoffs could be extended.
Yeah.
But I didn't think the issues came with the track per se. You know, like the turn one, I think the drivers just had to be a bit more sensible, you know, because the line sort of sort of get squeezed. There's only really one line through that 1-2-3 sequence.
Yeah.
I think the rules on track limits and sort of like giving space from another driver had to be clearer and enforced more.
Yeah.
And I think that's where you saw drivers taking liberties, because it could be a really good bit of sort of racetrack where you're trying to hang it around the outside and then push the other guy on the run down to that sort of twisty end of the first sector.
Yeah.
But I think the way things were, it wasn't enforced very well, and it didn't help the racing at all. Because that's the only real bit of wheel-to-wheel racing you can have on that track. And it never really happened, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it never really did. We were a bit, man, I wanted to see a clean race at the end of Jeddah. I wanted to see a clean race at the end of Abu Dhabi. I mean, I guess technically you could call the last lap of Abu Dhabi a clean race. But it's just such an odd season. And the guys at Shift F1, I was listening to with these last two races, especially, have kind of articulated it perfectly when they're talking about, like, it's just such a bizarre, like, you just so many like mixed emotions about it, because you have like one of the most exciting seasons maybe ever in the history of the sport, but at the same time, like, is Michael Massey even like gonna be around next year? Like,
yeah,
are we even gonna have,
no, you're right,
this guy as a FIA president next, or not the president, I guess they already switched him out, but whatever his, I guess, lead race director role is going to be there. I think overall, without playing the blame game at all, even though you could definitely go there, because I feel like Mac, there's a thing between Max where they're kind of, I don't know if they're really playing these roles or if this is legitimately who they are, maybe a little bit of both. But without even going into that, you've got a season where so many like weird situations have happened because of just a perfect storm of, you know, the regulations where they are right now, these cars, the cost caps, these two drivers specifically, how they'll take off 20 seconds ahead of the field and all these things. And I think you have a season where it's going to present a lot of challenges to the FIA in the offseason, as far as like, okay, how do we handle this? And then how do we take this into next season? Kind of like preserving, our fan base and reassuring people that this is actually a sport with rules.
Yeah.
That has, you know, because it's there's so many unique situations in this. And I think they've played, there's been a lot of favors that played into Lewis's hands and with Max's. And I don't know. I don't know if there's anybody, one person to blame. I think it's just kind of an amalgamation, just a storm of different things that kind of came together and presented us with just a crazy season all year. So I don't know, man. And especially with Abu Dhabi, where you think you're going to see Lewis run away with it, which cool, but also like I wanted to see a race, and then at the end you kind of did, but you know, you got Latifi crashing on that, you know, five laps to go. Nobody knew he was going to do that. I mean, it's not like Latifi did that on purpose. So again, it's the FIA having this kind of shit sandwich fall into their lap and then having to deal with it immediately. And then they've got a championship that's like, hasn't been, when was a championship ever tied down to the last race in the history of Formula One? Has that ever been a thing?
I think that the last time it was Emerson Fittipaldi, and that was in what, the mid 70s.
Yeah.
So we're getting on for sort of almost 40 years since it was last, like what, 50 years?
Yeah.
God, my maths is terrible. I hope my boss isn't watching this. I swear my maths is better than this normally, but yeah, 50 years.
Yeah. But however long, I mean, it hasn't happened like that. So you've got five laps. You're Michael Massey. You have to make a decision. Do you hand Mercedes the championship, or do you hand Red Bull the championship, essentially? And that, because that's the choice you have to make there at that point.
Yeah.
Because safety car either ends the race, you hand Mercedes the championship, and or you make the decision they did, and then you hand Red Bull, which is clearly going to happen, with Verstappen being on the tires and then Hamilton being on the shot hards. So, you know, what do you do in that situation? What do you do? Again, yeah, it's a thing where it's like, you just got to have people making the right calls. And I think sometimes that doesn't happen, man. And I guess the chaotic neutral side of me just says sometimes there's stuff that happens and you deal with it the best you can. But does the ending always come out to please everybody and make everybody happy in the end? And I think the answer is no. I think that the real life isn't like that. I mean, sometimes you just have these things where it's just like, okay, well, that was that. I mean, you know,
yeah,
you get older and you're just like, it's because like the saying it is what it is always bugged me. And then you get a little older and you're like, oh, I get it. It really is.
Yeah.
So I don't know, man. It was just crazy.
It was a shame that it ended like that. It felt gimmicky, almost the ending. I mean, sort of for transparency point of view, I think in that race Lewis was robbed a little bit. I think from what I understand of the regulations, that's not how it should have been followed. I think for people saying that he was sort of robbed of the championship is a bit unfair because Max had far more bad luck over the season that I think he deserved this and deserved the title.
No doubt.
I wish that I know it didn't qualify for a red flag, but I wish, given the context of the scenario, that there would have been a red flag, both cars get a chance to put on the same tires, and you have like a proper shootout, you know, a proper equal 3-4 lap sprint shootout.
Yeah.
And I think that would have felt added like the grandiose nature that we all wanted from the finale.
Yeah.
But the sort of safety car where only some were allowed through and you only Max could change his tires, it didn't feel right. And I totally understand Lewis and Mercedes protesting and you know, contesting the results. And let's hope at least that this is the last we ever see of this sort of let's say entertainment based stewarding. Yeah. Let's hope we sort of after the season it returns to a little bit more objective, you know?
Yeah. And it plays into the situation of how Liberty Media is choosing to present this sport to the world as well. And how the broadcasting is done. I think you can definitely say if you followed this sport, or in my case, if you have F1 TV and you've watched the last 20 seasons, I've tried to make it a point to watch at least one race from like 2000 on. And
that's cool.
Just kind of get a context, because I'm coming in late. But if you notice, you know, from 2019, I think 2019 is when the broadcasting style sort of changed. And you saw the different intros, and then it's gotten kind of spicier ever since. I believe the 2019 season is when Drive to Survive debuted as a series. And so you had that, and then the last year or two is when Drive to Survive really took hold in America. And then you had what it feels like is like an Americanizing broadcast. You know what I'm
saying? Yeah. No, you are right. Yeah.
And blood red American over here, like, you know, Texan, you know, I'm you know, I love my country, but like, fuck off, you know, like, it's just like there's some parts of it where I'm just like, why do I need to hear the radio between the stewards and the FIA all the time? I don't need the narrative in the race. Don't give me the narrative in the race. I don't give a shit about the narrative in the race. I want to see the race. That's what I want to see. And I want to be able to understand it on my terms. And because Toto said something when he was talking about how disillusioned he is with this, when he did that interview with like the black turtleneck and he's like in a white background, like he's being held hostage by Hezbollah or something. And he's just like so Austrian and just like sad. He's like, we are very disillusioned right now. But he said something that was,
hey, that's a good Toto Wolff, by the way. That was wasn't a bad Toto Wolff at all.
I just watched that like an hour ago. I was like, this is a weird, man, this is a very sullen Toto.
Yeah.
It's very like Dieter from Saturday Night Live. I don't know if you watched old Saturday Night Live where they did the Austrian guys, but he said something in that little blurb that made sense despite all the melodrama of it, where he said the stopwatch never lies. And I'm worried that we're turning this into something where the stopwatch is less relevant. And I think for racing fans and people that enjoy this sport, it's important that that part of it remains intact. The stopwatch doesn't ever lie. And who's fastest at the end of the day takes the trophy home. And I think we're approaching, I don't know if we're there yet, but if we're not there yet, we're definitely approaching a point where, you know, these rules and how they're being handled and the people making the decisions are interfering with that beautiful, pure part of the sport, which is the stopwatch never lies. And you want to see the fastest person win at the end of the day. And I think that's the concerning part for everybody that really loves the sport. And it's also why you see all the 19-year-olds on Twitter, talking and just having shitty takes on Twitter and talking about the story of it. And it's like we're catering to those people, and we're not remembering that this is fascinating on its own. It doesn't need overproduction, you know.
Yeah,
it's turning into like a bad 90s alt rock song. Like, for whatever reason, like producers in the 90s with rock and roll would just be like, hey, on the bridge, let's put like a Spanish acoustic flamenco guitar. It's like, this song already rips, man. We're No Doubt. We don't need an acoustic flamenco guitar. So like
Michael Massey is the whammy bar of F1. He's the whoa of the stewarding world.
He's the acoustic 90s bridge of F1 right now. Or Liberty is, you know?
That's unfair on Michael. Yeah.
I'm super sus of just Liberty Media. I mean, I'm just, because that's the way my mind goes already. That's why I enjoy podcasting, is because it's not traditional media and I already have my own thoughts on that. That's a whole other podcast, James, and we won't get into that.
It's getting a bit Alex Jones InfoWars here now. Yeah,
the InfoWars, but I'm just suspect of Liberty Media and how they're handling this whole thing. They're the ones that hold the purse strings, and they're also the ones that choose how this is presented to the world. And so I think this is a crazy season, and they have a choice to make in the off season. Whether or not they want to make this crazier and alienate more of the original fans and alienate all of the original fans of the sport, or if they want to play into, you know, the 17-year-olds on Twitter named Skyler, whose hot take on Twitter is Lewis Hamilton is the fastest driver of all time, and then it gets 18,000 retweets. So I don't, little girls named Bailey, there's Lando Norris is so hot, and then like 18 million retweets. You're like, cool, that's okay. Great. Awesome. That's fine.
But guys, the Alpine front wing, please. Anyone on that? No. Pierre Gasly topless pitch. Yeah. Cool. That's
no awesome talk on like the landmark breaking edge engineering that we're doing on these cars or how fast, it doesn't need the bullshit. It's already a great thing. It's like a slice of pizza at a good pizzeria. Well, like a margarita slice. You ever go to a good pizzeria and get like a good margarita slice? Doesn't do anything else. And that's how you test out a pizzeria. Go to get a margarita slice. Hey, new pizzeria, give me a margarita slice. I want to know how do you handle your dough, your cheese, and your sauce? Because if you got that going, cool. Everything else is cool. But this is we're already a margarita pizza, baby. Like we don't need any of this other stuff. Although it's nice and it's neat, it's cool to have, you know, I like what they do with the displays, things like that. The cool things they do with the visual effects, things like that. I think they're trying to bring in other like tire life meters for next year when they have the wheel covers. So there may be a thing where you'll be watching a race and you'll be able to see their tire life on their tires, which is crazy.
Oh, well, they'll superimpose
it on the wheel covers, which is like, cool. These are touches that like, it brings in newer fans. It helps you kind of understand it more. And it's something interesting for the ones of us that are like really obsessed with the data and things like that to latch onto as well. So it's these cool aspects. So it's like, you know, what part, hi, she's wanted. She, I think she has a hot take that she wants to throw in. And she's like, get Massey out of here, right? Meow. So
is that Antonio Giovacazzi down there?
Giovacazzi. That...
Thank you. I do kids' birthdays and weddings, guys. Please put me. Yeah,
we're here all weekend. But yeah, man, we'll see. And you know, we'll come back next year. We'll talk about it, and we'll see what goes on. But I trust them. I just want to trust them to make the right decision with this.
Yeah, not, me too.
Because it's like, man, at the end of the day, the most important thing is safety. That's the end of the day.
Yeah.
And rules are there to ensure as much of that is handled as possible, because you never can ensure anything 100% when you're going 200 miles an hour, but you can do a lot to mitigate it. And if you're not doing as much as you can to mitigate it, then you're knowingly putting people's lives in danger. So
yeah,
as long as it's a sport where you've got to be on the cutting edge of speed and performance, but you also should be on the cutting edge of safety and technology that put the technology everywhere, not just in the cockpit of these cars and not just in the engine boxes and the pit lanes, put it on the track too. And I think they do in a lot of ways, but it's like, if you're not doing that, then what are we doing? What's going on? Because
yeah, nobody exactly wants to say that.
So, hot man, we got some, man, dude, we're just coming out of the gate, just firing hot today, baby.
Hell yeah.
So, crazy season. We'll see. I mean, not much more to be said. Any other thoughts on that? Because I want to talk about driver changes and things. We could talk about that, but like what do you have any other thoughts that you want to throw out there?
I guess like one thing is that I think is a shame is that this hasn't been a very competitive era of F1. It's been quite sort of dominated by one team and sort of one driver really. And it feels like we've just cracked the formula for competitiveness and now we're getting rid of the cars. One thing I know they're changing is to make cars overtake easier. And I understand why they're doing that, but I sort of hope they don't make it too easy, because then I don't think you're going to see a lot of on-track battles. You know, I'm nervous for next year. I really hope that all this momentum that F1, the brand, has built up is sort of utilized and the cars are ready to facilitate that.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I hope so, at least.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know either. It's pretty crazy because, well, the thing is like, we've cracked the code for competitiveness with Max and Lewis, right? Maybe I'll reconsider, because there were a lot of really good battles in the midfield this year too. So maybe, yeah, I think your statement is true. Do you think it's going to be like a 2014 deal where it's just like they just kind of have to figure it out and the cars are going to be a little less, you know, impressive than we anticipated, or what do you think?
I hope not, obviously. I think, to be honest, it doesn't matter so much what the cars look like or what the cars sound like or what they perform, as long as whatever happens, they're close to each other.
Yeah,
I think that's what I mean. A lot of the terrible tracks historically this year produced good racing. You know, France has been good. Spain was good. Russia was amazing. And I think it just shows, as long as the cars are close, F1's fine. And that is the only thing I care about. And I'm really hoping that the cost cap is gonna nail that. We'll see. Time will tell.
The cost cap did a lot this year to tighten the pack. And that worked really well. I think that's one of the ones that might need small adjustments here and there. It always does, but I think it did a lot to bring the pack closer together. I think the biggest thing with these cars, because the engines are essentially staying the same until 26. But the biggest thing they're wanting to overhaul is just the aerodynamics and how the cars react to each other in this dirty air, because the ones we have now are just, you know, they're basically just rolling weather stations with like all the stuff they have just protruding out. They're like Inspector Gadget cars with their I think they're trying to just figure out how to mitigate that. I mean, because what we're seeing in these 22 cars, at least in the renders, is just a more streamlined car. I mean, they look curvier, they're sleeker, a little sexier, depending on your definition of that. And they flow more. And I think they're just trying to figure out a way to make a proper race car that just doesn't have a million pieces that could fall off at any second. I think IndyCar has done a pretty good job of that. That's also the reason why they're slower, right? They're, you know, I think around code, at least they're like 12 seconds slower than F1 on that track. And they're like F2, like essentially IndyCar is like F2 speeds in a lot of, a lot of ways. So maybe I'm wrong on that. Maybe they're in between, but, I think that's what they're trying to do. It's just make a more aerodynamic car and then figure it out along the way. I'm excited to see what the different teams do with this interpretation. I don't want these cars all look the same. I want there to be some subtle differences, just like there are this year. And I think there will be. I think we'll be good with that.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope so. I'm excited. I can't wait for the new season already.
Yeah, I can't either. Driver changes, real quick. Do you have, how are you doing on time?
I can go a little bit longer, I guess.
What you got? 5 minutes, 10 minutes?
Yeah, about 10 minutes. 5-10 minutes. Yeah. 10 minutes.
Cool. So Bottas to Alpha. I don't know if that we covered that before already. Giovinazzi.
I think it was a rumor when we last spoke.
Was it a rumor?
Yeah. Not official though.
It wasn't official, was it?
No.
Albon to Williams. Zoe to Alpha, right? He's going to be alongside. Am I getting that correct? So
yeah, alongside Valtteri. Yeah.
You to Alpha with Bottas. Think that's going to be a good combination. I think they've got two drivers now that have the ability to pull those cars up the field a little bit if the car itself is not helping. So I'm definitely predicting. Actually, I'm not predicting anything at this point because we got different cars, like you said. So I'm not predicting anything. I'm not. My mouth is shut for right now on that, but. They definitely have two pretty talented drivers. I like the fact that Guan Yu Zhou had a little bit more time to bake in F2 than somebody like Yuki did or things like that. They weren't rushed. And he took his time and played his cards and then ended up where he is. And so I think he's going to have a pretty good rookie season. I told somebody else in the Midwest F1 Discord that I think he's going to have a markedly better season than Yuki as far as rookie seasons go, since we can compare them back to back. So I think he'll have a better chance. Also different development programs. So
yeah,
how much can you compare it? And then we got Russell up in Mercedes. I think he challenges for a championship.
Really? First season.
That's the one prediction I'll make is George Russell will absolutely challenge for a championship in 2022. I think he's too complete of a driver already. I think there's too much Nigel Mansell in that kid. And he's just, I don't know, man, I'm a huge George Russell fan overall. I love him. And I think he's great for the sport. He's, you know, he obviously plays to the team and things like that, as far as social media presence goes. And you kind of have to, and you gotta have to be that, you know, that already complete diamond when you get to that sport. So of course he toes the team line and things, but I don't know. I just can't help but fanboy out over the kid. He's really good. I like him a lot. I think he's going to go for a championship next year, at least be up there and, in the top four. And then what else we got, man? We got, Latifi, Albon. We've got Haas is still the same, right? We still got Mick and
it's the Chuckle Brothers are still there. Yeah.
We should have the chart up, but we don't. And then we've got what else? Who else we got? We got 20.
So Alpine's the same. Most of the teams are the same. I think they wanted to bed in their lineups for next year. So make sure you're not going to have any inter-team issues. And it makes sense. I think it's a very strong grid. Yeah. I don't think there's many drivers at all that are sort of like stealing a living. You know, I think most, if not everyone, deserves to be there.
They really do.
And even like, you know, Mazepin, who is the big sort of joke on the grid, we haven't seen the guy in a competitive car. No. If next year, if Mick's pulling that Haas into points and Mazepin is still, you know, a minute behind the field, then we can have a conversation about his spot in F1. But for now, I think the kid at least deserves a season with a competent car, you know?
I think he does. I don't know. Does Nikita Mazepin deserve a season in a competitive car? That's a good question. Because I'm not sure. I'm not convinced. Either way, I just antics aside, he's never shown any sort of he's two or three laps down every race. Where did I, you know what? I'd have to look at how he compares to Mick. If he's statistically, if he's anywhere near where Mick was, then maybe he does. Yeah, maybe I do agree. But I just feel like he was always so far behind, man. You'd see him like plus three laps every time. You're like, dude, what are you doing? What is going on? Quick aside, yeah. Nikita spun on the first lap of the US Grand Prix, and I spent the first seven laps up by turn one to watch the intro. What is it? It's a song to watch the lights out. I had to catch that. And so I guess he spun somewhere on lap one. And so by the time the pack came around for lap two, down up in turn one, Nikita was nowhere to be found. And I'm up on that bank right next to the turn. So like when you go up turn one, Coda, that grassy area up here, totally packed full of people. And so it was wild. There was already like orange smoke bombs going off in the first turn. So it was really cool. But also was really funny was Nikita comes around first lap, like 30 seconds behind everybody else. So I guess he spun. And so as soon as it was apparent that he was coming around 30 seconds behind everyone, there was a pack of dudes like 20 yards to my left on this bank that would just start this cheer every time Nikita would come around the line. Because we could see down to the final turn. So there was a cheer for like a pack. And then there was a cheer for Nikita. So it'd be like, everybody.
like an audio Mexican wave, following the whole way down.
It would spread. The cheer would spread because the rest of the bank of people would realize what was going on as he was coming down pit lane. So like by the time he got to turn one, everybody was going nuts from Nikita. Just Nikita like, go, buddy, you got it.
I love that.
It was so fun to see that, man. But I guess those are the only three driver changes we got this year. I mean, we'll see what happens with the cars. Ferrari still got the best lineup, pound for pound.
Yeah.
And I think agree. That's the reason why they pulled out P3 in the constructors this year. By the end of the season, beginning of the season, I was like, they'll be P6, you know, when we were making predictions. And now it's just like they're P3 in the constructors. And I'm not surprised at all. I'm not surprised at that. And especially with I think Binotto like underplayed their hand a lot. I think they were just like, I think Binotto was just like, I don't know. We'll see. It's a spaghetti time. And then I don't know where that came from. But don't lie. Italians, you're probably in spaghetti right now. So it's fine. But,
exactly.
I don't know. I think he underplayed his hand, but I think he knew what was going on. I think he had some things up his sleeve. Especially with that engine upgrade and then these two drivers. What a performance all season by Carlos Sainz, real quick.
Just wow.
Phenomenal, you know. We'll see what happens with 2022, and we're excited for it. Speaking of 2022, we're tossing around some ideas for a little reshuffle of how we do this show. And there's a lot of F1 talk out there, and maybe we'll keep it the exact same. Maybe we will, but we're going to talk a lot in the off season and figure out a format. We're thinking about going the way of a video game based show with the game, and maybe a little trivia, and maybe a little drinking game mixed in.
We'll see.
You know, a little F1 drinking driving, but only on the game. It's not only on the game. No consequences. We here at the Slipstream Podcast do not condone drunk driving in the slightest.
Please don't sue us.
Don't drink and drive. Don't drink and drive real cars. But if you drink and drive fake cars in the video game, very fun. Very, very fun. So just don't do it for real. Okay. And don't sue. So we will be back next season. How we will be back and what we will be called might be different. So we're gonna talk about some things. And this has been a really fun season, James. I thank you for being with me. And we've learned a lot. I think we've learned a lot about this, how to do this show and what we want to do and what we may not want to do going forward. But it'll be exciting. We got new cars and we might have a new format for the show. So stick around, stay subscribed to the channel, because if we change anything, it will still be on these channels and you just might see a new name or a picture or things like that and a new way of doing things for 2022. So, man, thank you for joining me for this. I know you got to run. You got some friends coming over for a little celebration. Any parting words for 2021?
My parting words will be, I will be putting some money on Christmas Day for the odds of Charles Leclerc to claim his first World Drivers' Championship.
Dude. You're
in 2022, saying, whilst bringing home the Constructors' Championship for the Scuderia.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that is a prediction. That is a prediction. That's bold. Lingy 12 coming in with the bold and hot takes, like a good solid wing sauce.
That's a hot take.
Saucy and spicy, Lingy. Lingy 12, 21, saucy and spicy. Going into 2022.
So I'll take that.
We will take it. I will see you sooner than 2022, but I guess in this arena with our audience, I will see you next year. Back with some fresh cars and a fresh format. And man, thanks for doing this. Thanks for being with me. I'll let you go so you can do your thing. Shoot your stuff. Let it rip.
Thanks for everyone. Thanks for listening, everyone. It's been a lot of fun this year. Take care, guys.
Definitely. Thanks for joining us this season, and we will see you in 2022. And until then, holiday season, New Year's, off season, everything like that. Keep pushing.